So I'm from Iowa State, and I'm going to talk about the future climate scenarios that have been developed. Our group has been involved in some of these, and so we'll look at the scenarios and then map some of the growing regions on top of that, because we have semi-arid and we have farming. So there's two sectors there that we have to look at. So just giving a little background as to the average temperature and precipitation across the U.S., and then we'll focus on the semi-arid region and define what the semi-arid region really is. You can see that temperature, maximum temperature, this is based on the 1981 to 2010 normals, is in the eastern half of the U.S. is pretty much latitudinally dependent. And then that relationship totally falls apart in the west, or at least the northern three quarters of that, where mountains really dictate the maximum daily temperatures in the region, and it almost looks like a terrain map. Similarly, for minimum temperatures, so using the same normals that we see in the eastern half of the country, that you ship northward and the minimum temperatures go down, but of course in the mountainous regions of terrain, mountainous regions in the west, we have quite different pattern. If we look at precipitation, of course, and that's what really drives or dictates where semi-arid regions are, we see that it's really divided, the country is really divided in two again, and that it's to the west of this strong gradient here that we pick up the arid regions. But again, it's a very spatially disconnected region, that area, and there are arid regions scattered around throughout the whole western part of the U.S. So if we look at the definition, it's the BS classification, and it's subdivided into the cooler parts where there is cooler evenings and a cool season is dominated in the northern parts. But we do have some of the hot, dry, semi-arid regions in the southwest. So we're going to be looking at both of those. And if we look at how they are, the characteristics of these regions, the cooler ones have a low relative humidity and cloud cover, low frequency and amount of precipitation. That's a key factor. Moderate to high mean annual temperature, moderate to high monthly temperature. So not surprising. And if we look at the hot components of the BS classification, we get essentially the same first four, except that moderate or mean turns to high, moderate or high turns to just high for these two. But then we pick up two additional criteria, high diurnal temperature ranges and high wind velocities at times, and I think Phoenix had one of those events here recently. So what I've done here is to try to focus a bit. I can't cover all of these subregions, so I'm focusing on three. This one, the Great Plains, which spans a wide latitude expanse, and we'll see that really should be subdivided into two. And then up this region here in the southwest is a very high producing region for vegetables, not our commodity crops like wheat here. And then this region in the Pacific Northwest, it's a little bit below the high wheat producing region up here, but it is a fairly large region under this classification. So we're going to look at those three as characteristic of the crops or at least the climate change in those regions. And this should have spilled over here and gotten all of Montana and the Golden Triangle up here, so that it captures the wheat growing region, but I just use an oval to signify that. So if we map those same ovals onto the precipitation map, you can see that this large one spans the whole width, the north-south direction of the country through this region, and is going to experience then a lot of climate differences within this classification the desert southwest here, you can see in the precipitation map, it encompasses this region of very, very low precipitation. And this region has higher precipitation than, or at least it's it bounds on the precipitation from the coastal area. And so again, those are the regions that I've selected there. So let's first look at what the 20th century climate has done. Have there been changes in the past 100 years that we should be mindful of as we start to look forward to the future, that we'll, as I'll look in, beyond this? So just to define in terms of crops, since wheat is a major crop, commodity crop in semi-arid regions, we'll use that. We can think also of sorghum, or I think peas are now being considered, barley and so on are growing in some of these regions. But we see then, thinking about the Great Plains, we see that that is the major wheat growing region, and we have it extends up into this region as well. We see very little wheat, or no wheat actually indicated on this for this third classification area that I've indicated down here. And I didn't capture this region up here in western Washington. Apologize for anybody from that. I'm not trying to exclude you or anything, but I wanted to just use three regions, so I chose this one down here. While I have this one, I just want to note that there are other wheat-growing regions, which those of you that are in wheat know that very well. But they're outside of this region, and so at my very last slide, I want you to remember that there is this wheat-growing region, specifically the one in the Mississippi Valley and north into the north of the Ohio Valley, spreading into Kansas and Oklahoma, and I'll come back to that as well. So, how has the temperature changed over this region in the 20th century? You can see that this is a temperature change in degrees Fahrenheit, that already these regions have experienced temperature increases. So the high temperatures that define this region have really been exacerbated over the past century. And if we look at precipitation, you can see here that increases in precipitation are green, decreases are the browns, the tans, and you can see also that not only is it getting warmer in these regions, but it's getting drier. So not uniformly, however, we're seeing some spillover in the northern tier of states, with the exception of western Montana here. And this wheat-growing region up here is increased in its precipitation, but the desert southwest, we're seeing in these very dry regions, has gotten even drier in the last over the last century. So it's this trend we're already seeing. Now, what can we say about the future in these regions? To do that, we look at a number of sources. We use the models from that were used for the National Climate Assessment. The fourth National Climate Assessment was issued in 2014. And I'd encourage you, if you have any interest in this, just Google National Climate Assessment, and you'll get enough reading to last you until the next convening of this conference next year. So, but it's a lot of high-level information, but you can burrow down into a lot of peer-reviewed. We looked at over 1,000 papers for the agriculture chapter alone. Jerry Hatfield and I led the team to look at the agriculture chapter. We had to condense that down into 6 pages. It's very high-level stuff at the top, but you can burrow in and you can get a lot of peer-reviewed papers that were the supporting evidence for these changes. So let's look first at precipitation. Here I've got two different scenarios, future scenarios. This is ERCP2. That's a very low reduced emission, not a very high emission pathway to the future. And these are mid-century. This is end of the 21st century. So this is the change. Green is increased precipitation. Brown is decreased. This is a low emission scenario. This is a high emission scenario. So the first thing you see that the more emissions, the more changes we're going to see. And that dry areas are getting drier and moist areas are getting moister. So that seems to be a general pattern, and that the northern, the Canadian provinces and beyond, further north, are going to see higher precipitation. Those at the lower end that are already bordering on tropical or subtropical are going to see drier conditions. You can see that seasonally, in the winter, this increased precipitation will reach down into the two or three rows of states into the U.S., but in the summer, pretty much all the region will dry under the high scenario. But you see that it makes a big difference. So when we talk about encouraging action on climate mitigation, well, these are the reasons that low emission scenarios mean that there will be not much change. But when we get into these high emission scenarios, we're in some pretty irreversible kinds of climates. This is another set. This is an A2, different set of simulation, earlier set of simulations. But it's same pattern. You can see it a little better here. These hatched, where it's hatched, it means that we have higher confidence in the models. Where it's not hatched means that there's a lot of uncertainty in the model. Some are showing increase, some are showing decrease, and so on balance we have low confidence. But at the extremes we have pretty high confidence. Just means that we don't know where that line of transition will be. And in fact, in any given year, these in this white regions may experience heavy rains, higher rainfalls, but in subsequent years may be very dry. So the extremes, there's going to be more variability, wider set of extremes over much of the U.S. If we zero in on what the National Climate Assessment called the Great Plains, you see that there's a lot of variation from north to south. And generally, this is annually, let me start over here. This is CMIP-3. So these are global models, and these are early scenarios. This is 2021 to 2050. 2050 to 2040 to 70, and then 70 to 2100. And you can see as the this is under the A1 scenario, so this is a relatively high emission scenario, that you see that we see this drying again pretty well pervasive in the southern part of the Great Plains, but in the northern part we see precipitation increases. So we're starting to already see that to some extent, and that will likely be increased. This is the North American Regional Climate Assessment Program. We were a part of, our Iowa State team was a part of that. These are regional models that were embedded in global models to get better resolution so we could see a better detail on the regional effects. But you see the same overall patterns, higher annually, higher in the eastern part here into the Dakotas, and then drier in the western part. And similarly, seasonally, more precipitation in the winter and a wider range of drying in the summer. Soil moisture, we have the same patterns. This is end of century, this is mid-century, this is lower emission and higher emission. So the pattern is pretty consistent that under high emissions, we'll see really quite a large decrease in soil moisture throughout the western part of the U.S. So let's look at temperature. And to focus on temperature extremes, I'm looking at the daily maximum temperature, the high temperatures, the number of days with temperatures over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is the latter part of the 20th century. And we see that over most of the U.S., less than 20 days, most of the country actually less than 10 days, over 100 degrees in any given year. If we go to a low emission scenario, end of the 21st century, we start seeing that a lot of regions, particularly in the south, in Texas and in the desert southwest, of days over 100 days with over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And if we go to the high emission scenario, we see that well over 3 months of the year, we'll have over 100 degree Fahrenheit days. And this spreads down also into southern Texas and into the southern part of the wheat growing region. But a lot of change across this region, but generally a pretty large number of days above 100 degrees. So that's likely to be a part of our future under if we choose to go the high emission scenario. So we can, the elevator speech on this is that dry areas will become drier and hotter. Wet areas will become wetter and more humid. And we're already seeing these, and that's very likely to continue. We can also say that for any given location, there's going to be more extremes. So dry periods at my location, where I'm at, if I have periods that are dry, they're going to probably get drier and hotter. And if I have wet periods, they're probably going to get wetter and more humid. So those, if you can remember those, that's the, really the takeaway message that really applies to the whole Western U.S. and for most of the globe, actually. So some of the key messages from the National Climate Assessment for I'll look at these three regions. Then they looked at the Southwest, the Desert Southwest. Snowpack and stream flow amounts are projected to decline in parts of the Southwest. Decreasing surface water supply reliability for cities, agriculture, and ecosystems. Focusing on agriculture, the Southwest produces more than half of the nation's high-value specialty crops, which are irrigation-dependent, particularly vulnerable to extreme moisture, cold, and heat. Reduced yields from increasing temperatures and increasing competition for scarce water supplies will displace jobs and influence some rural communities. So, pretty sober forecast for the Southwest. If we look to the Northwest, changes in timing of stream flow related to changing snow melt are already being observed, and these will continue, reducing the supply of water for many competing demands and causing the far-reaching ecological and socioeconomic consequences. What it's hinted at here that there's a change in the seasonality, and I don't have time to talk about this, but this is becoming a big issue, and particularly in Iowa, where I'm from, we're seeing some changes in seasonality that if you look at it with the right metric, you can see that it's having an impact on farming, particularly getting the crop in the spring, in our case. While agriculture sector technical ability to adapt to changing conditions can offset some of these adverse impacts of a changing climate, there remain critical concerns for agriculture with respect to the cost of adaptation, development of more climate-resilient technologies, which is a focus of this whole event, and management and availability and timing of water. Timing, there comes that seasonality again. For the Great Plains, rising temperatures are leading to increased demand for water and energy in parts of the region. This will constrain development, stress natural resources, and increase competition for water among communities, agriculture, energy, and ecological uses. Changes in crop growth cycles due to warming winters and alterations in the timing and magnitude of rain events have already been observed, and these trends will continue. So we already have a window of what's happening, and it offers us, I think, an opportunity to plan, to understand this, but we need to recognize that these trends are continue, and they will require new agriculture and livestock management practices. And the magnitude and expected changes will exceed those experienced in the last century, and that existing adaptation and planning efforts are inadequate to respond to these projected changes. So we really need to develop new ideas, new ways of doing things. So I'm going to finish up here with a simulation that we did for mid-century for the wheat-growing regions, and these are changes in yield, expected yield in rain-fed wheat across the U.S., with red being declines in wheat yields, green and blue being increases in wheat yields. What you see is that wheat yields will decline. Now, there are four different global models here. These two models are basically a little drier than the average. These two are a little wetter than the average. But what you see, so these are actually drier and hotter, and these are wetter and a little cooler. But you can see that for the dry models, we're seeing major declines in wheat, especially the western part of the Great Plains, and that carries through here as well, even into the dry model, the wet models, slight decreases there. The increases will be mainly in those growing regions that I mentioned that are outside the semi-arid growing regions. So we may see some shifts in where wheat is grown. Of course, these are percentages, and so a big percentage on small numbers, not necessarily a big number. So you have to understand that part of it as well. So in summary, climate change will have major impact on semi-arid farming regions of North America, including Canada. Higher temperatures and amplification of current precipitation extremes are very likely scenarios. High temperatures and availability of irrigation water will be limiting factors, particularly in the south, and shifts in rainfall patterns in the northern semi-arid regions likely will create greater interannual variation. And there may even be some creation of new semi-arid farming regions in the U.S., or loss of some. That is, we could lose some if in the northwest, for instance, we get more precipitation, it may no longer be semi-arid. So we have to think about these overall patterns that are occurring and get that into our thinking as we look to the future. Thank you.